Towards the end of the last session, we were asked about the gift of helps. Are there any examples in the scripture? And I was thinking maybe Epaphroditus might be a good example of that. The Apostle Paul writes and says, I supposed it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus, my brother and companion in labor and fellow soldier, but your messenger, that he and he that ministered to my wants. And so on. He describes how Epaphroditus had been a help to him. And then later in the chapter 4, he says, I entreat thee, referring to Epaphroditus, true yoke fellow, help those women who labored with me in the gospel. I presume that's Euodias and Syntyche, and it seems that there was some growing tension there between them, and maybe this is a good example of someone who's coming in to minister to them in such a way that they would continue working well together. So he may be a good example of that particular gift.
Can you give the reference for that?
That's Philippians chapter 4 and verse 3. Well, there's so much more we could say about these points on the sheet under assessing the opportunities. There are lots of exciting stories about open doors and how the Lord's opened doors for people. I was in Ireland some years back, and the brethren had tried to arrange a meeting on the Sunday evening, and it hadn't worked out. And I've been very conscious of this whole idea of open doors. And I said, look, instead of trying to jury-rig something here, why don't you just leave it, and we'll pray that the Lord will give us an open door. And so they left it that way. And I went to speak at a couple's weekend at a retreat center outside of Enniskillen. And when we broke for the first session, everybody went for a cup of tea. There was one man left sitting alone, obviously not a couple. And so I went up and introduced myself, and he told me that he was a Roman Catholic. He was an attorney. He was from the city of Sligo in the south of Ireland. He'd been walking through the Dublin Airport, and someone had given him a CD of The Uniqueness of Christianity, and he had taken it home and listened to it, and he had contacted George Gergen, who copied those CDs, and said, I have a lot of dealings down at the local prison because I'm an attorney, and I really think those men need to hear this, so could I make copies and distribute them down there? And he said, I'm here tonight to ask, or today to ask you, if you'll come to my house next Sunday. He said, that would be the best evening for us. And he said, I'll fill my house with Roman Catholics, and you come and preach to them. And when I arrived there, I mean, it was the most beautiful thing to see how they received their neighbors. They were so gracious. It was such a lovely thing to see. In fact, they gave me supper, and then they said, no, you'll probably want to go up here. These are not saved people, as far as I could tell. You'll want to go up here, and they set up a little spot by a fire, gave me a cup of tea. You'll want to get your thoughts together before the people arrive. And so I'm sitting up there preparing, you know, and I hear them greeting all their friends downstairs. And then I go downstairs, and here's this room full, university professors, town chiropractor, a veterinarian, other lawyers, I mean, sort of the cream of the town of Sligo. And this man says to me, his name's Michael Monahan, he says, now, we've all heard your CD, we know what we're going to get tonight. We're not going to tell you what to teach us either by text or by time. You can take as long as you want. I got back to my room. I spoke for about an hour and a half. And then the question started. I got back to my room at 2:30 in the morning. And the lady is saying, you know, I was just saying the other day, the Catholic Church doesn't have Sunday school for our children anymore. Do you have any good literature that we could get and, you know, start a Sunday school with the children? It's an open door. And you see, I would have gone ahead and got booked on Sunday, and we would have arranged something, eh? And then I would have missed that golden opportunity. So I think if we were more conscious of this idea, In the story Jesus told, when he says, ask, seek, knock, and the door shall be open, he's actually the one behind the door. Okay, so that's the idea. That when a door opens, the Lord's already there. The door that I thought, I couldn't get through that. When the door is open, he doesn't push in from the outside. He's actually already working on the inside. And he's the one who says, come on in and, you know, join me. That's great, isn't it? And most of you have heard all my open door stories, so I won't repeat them. But they're pretty exciting stories, I think, to see how the Lord actually does this in our lives and gives us these open doors. But we're further along in the list here. Observing, developing, and measuring possible channels of communication. We talked about this a little bit before, that a channel only holds so much. And we have to be looking for channels, looking for opportunities to communicate with people or with groups of people. And it may be in all different ways. It may be that you're involved in a group of people doing something in the community. It may be helping students that are having difficulty. Or maybe English is a second language. Maybe there are a bunch of Chinese people who've come in. They don't speak English very well. They want to learn English. And this is a wonderful channel of communication. Now, you're not going to just get up there and blast away in the gospel the first time or even the second or third time. But you have an opportunity to minister to them. And, you know, you're looking for these vehicles by which you can communicate the truth. A friend of mine and his wife went over to China. He's an engineer, Bill and Corrine Wark, and they went over there, and Corrine was very open to the idea of being used by the Lord somehow. And at the university, they said, now, could your wife give some lectures on what it's like in America, you know, life in America? And so she thought, is this my way for sharing the gospel? So here was this big crowd of people who came out, and she got up and she said, what I want to do is just sort of tell you a typical year in my life in America. And so she tells the story of Christmas and Christmas celebration and what happens at Christmas and what Christmas means. And then, of course, she tells about Easter and what Easter means. And Thanksgiving, and why we're thankful, and you know what that means. And she went through her year and essentially preached the gospel through the calendar year. These are channels, these are opportunities, and we should be looking for those, because we can always demand, we can try to force our way into something, but it's never as opportune, never as effective as when there's a clear and open channel that the Lord provides for communicating with people. Check out resources, regional websites. And that, by that I mean there are websites for every town, county, you know, in the country. And you can go on there and they'll tell you how many homes there are, median income. They'll give you all sorts of... They'll tell you where all the parks are. They'll tell you where all the schools are. There are all sorts of resources available to scope out your town and to find out who's where, you know, maybe the ethnic background of your area. There's a lot of Ukrainians or a lot of whatever. You can find a lot of that out on the web. In addition to that, AAA, Tourist Board, Convention Bureau... They've got all kinds of good stuff. You go down there and they'll give you a big bag of stuff that will give you like a sheet of all the county fairs and all the markets and all the parades and all the events where the world's already getting a crowd together. Why bother going to all the money and expense of trying to get your own crowd when somebody else is doing that for you, right? And that's what they did in the New Testament. They went to the market all day, every day in the market, says the scripture, right? every day in the market, or every day they were in the synagogue reasoning, or whatever it might be. So they were habitual. They see, people will walk by my little stall one day and have absolutely no interest in it. But then something happens in their life. They get cancer, and then all of a sudden they think about that. Remember that there was a little CD there that said something about hope in the storms of life. They had no interest 2 weeks ago, but now all of a sudden they have an interest, and they go back and there's nobody there. There has to be consistency. There has to be, you know, when a man's building a business, he's going to build a bakery or a butcher shop, he's got to be there. He's got to have regular hours, because I may not need any baking today, but 2 weeks from now, my granddaughter's having a birthday, and I want to get a cake. And it's like, well, you know, this person never came here before. Nope, they're here now, right? So I have to be consistent. I have to have some visibility in the community, and there has to be consistency. However that's done, there has to be some way so that if somebody is searching, and it may be that you have a regular gospel event somewhere, and everybody knows on that day, every day, or every week, or every month, whenever it is, that so that if I am interested, I know where to go. My great uncle was the only one not saved in the family. I mean, we're saying five generations. He's the only one not saved, and he was prayed for every day of his life. And when he was a young man of, I think, 21, he almost got saved. But he said no. And by his own confession, for the next 53 years, he didn't have an anxious thought about his soul. Moved to California, made millions, joined the country club set, jet-set it around the world. No thought of his soul. And we would try to contact him, we'd visit him, he just kept everything at arm's length, just like that. Nothing got to him. And then he had a heart attack, and he thought he was going to die. And all of a sudden, he began to think about his soul. I should tell you that at that series of meetings when he almost got saved, it was a young preacher by the name of Hector Alves from Vancouver had come out. And Hector Alves was actually staying at my great-grandmother's house, sleeping in the same bedroom with my Uncle Russ. And every night he went to the meeting, and he almost got saved, but he said no. So now he's 74 years old. He has this heart attack. My aunt's still working. So they've got a place in Palm Springs. He lives in the Bay Area. So he goes down to the place in Palm Springs. He locks the door, doesn't answer the phone, doesn't eat, hardly sleeps. He just reads his Bible day after day after day. And the more he reads, the more he thinks, I've had it. God took me at my word. He just can't get it. Sunday afternoon comes, he thinks, you know, if there's a gospel hall in town, they always preach the gospel Sunday night. So he looks up the phone book. Sure enough, there's a little gospel hall in Palm Springs. It's as tight as a bark in a tree. You know, you need a shoehorn to get in there. But he goes down there, sits in the back row, and a couple of hymns and a prayer, and then an old man gets up to preach. It's Hector Alves. And my Uncle Russ gets saved. But the fact that the consistency, you know, he knew if he could find a gospel hall, he knew he'd hear the gospel preached Sunday night. Now, I'm not saying the best way to go about it is to have a gospel meeting every Sunday night, but I am saying that what we need in the community is a regular presence. We need people like, and that's what one of these, the fridge magnet does, eh? Need prayer, we care, with a phone number on it. You get that around the community, they don't need it today. They don't need it next month or next year. Like the woman, it took her 3 years to hit bottom. She received it, she threw everything else away except the fridge magnet, put it on the fridge, and over 3 years her life deteriorated to the point where one morning she got up and said, it's time to call that number. Well, Larry Sachs has a phone just for that number. If it rings 24 hours a day, he knows this is the crisis line. This is the prayer line. So how serious are we about that sort of thing? But I think the concept that, yes, we're serious about this, we're available 24 hours a day. If somebody is in soul trouble, we're available. And people know that. People know that they can call on us. We're serious about that. All right, taking inventory of our resources. We're not starting from scratch. There are assemblies out there. There are evangelists that do know something about gospel work. And there are some outreaches. Some of them may need to be evaluated. If a farmer kept using the same seed in the same field, and every year there was virtually nothing to show for it, he probably would make some changes. Now we have to be careful here. You know, the emphasis very often has been, you hear people say this, all God asks is that we be faithful. Right? Well, he does ask us to be thoughtful too. And it may be, as with the case of the Lord Jesus teaching his disciples, there were situations where they were to wipe the dust off their feet and go to the next town. Like, this is asphalt. I'm not going to throw seed on asphalt. So there are sometimes situations where, in an attempt, repeatedly seeking to enter in, we are rebuffed eventually sometimes. And this is where we need the leading of the Spirit of God. But we say, I think it's over for now. We may come back to this, but right now we need to change direction here. So if it's not being effective, then we need to ask the Lord if maybe what we ought to do is just move on to something else. Because we just don't have a lot of time to spare. If we had unlimited number of people and everybody was looking for something to do, we say, yeah, carry on. I mean, go ahead and do it. But when there's such a limited resource, limited number of people, limited time, we can't afford to waste a lot of time in work that's not productive. So there may be outreaches that are already going on. There may be ways to encourage and enhance those. So, for example, there's a little assembly down in southern Michigan. We had a meeting of all the various assemblies in Michigan to talk about evangelism, and they asked us to come down and help them. And I said, well, yeah, sounds like a good idea. Can I ask a couple of questions? All right. What is it you're handing out at this fair that you're going to? And they showed us the stuff. I said, have you, invested a lot of money in this? Well, no, not a lot of money. I didn't think they had. And I said, so have you test driven this stuff? Like, have you shown an unbeliever this and said, what do you think of this? Be straight with me. And if they say, well, actually, I don't think I'd read that. Okay. Show it to another unbeliever. Just go ahead. Edit it. Here's a pen. Go ahead. Scribble. Whatever you want. What's unclear? What's unduly offensive? What words don't you understand? And if it comes back all red pencils, like, maybe you need to... You know, people wouldn't think of selling a candy or a tube of toothpaste without trying it out on focus groups and checking, you know, seeing if it works. I get tracts sent to me. People want me to publish them. I don't think they've heard about spell checker. And I say, well, look, you know, let's get serious. I am so humiliated when I watch one of these Disney movies, Disney videos, like a kid's video with my grandson, and it comes to the end of the cartoon, and then like 80 names or 100 names come up. All these people being paid big salaries for a cartoon. And they got the best of everything and all the backups and all the, you know, people looking after their wardrobes and on the list goes for a cartoon. And then I think how cavalier we are about producing material for the gospel. So, is there a way to enhance things? So I said to this brother, and I said, I don't see in your literature, I don't see any contact information. You know, they sometimes chum for fish. They just take some fish guts and throw it overboard, and all the fish are attracted, but there's no hooks. They're just, you feed fish or whatever. Kids like to watch the fish come up to the pier. there's no way to bring the fish into the boat. And so I said, look, if we're going to come down, spend our time driving down to your part of the country, we want to work with you, but we want to do something that really has the most benefit. So what about getting some other literature that, you know, you pick it, but here's some stuff that we found really useful. And what about putting in a contact card so that if anybody's interested, they can actually get back to you? And we made some other suggestions, because I said, you know, we can stir up the Christians to come once, but if they come down and they feel that was a total waste of time, it's going to be twice as hard to get them the next time. And they, after a while, they're not interested in coming to something that's half-baked. People haven't bothered to think things through. So we need to do some vigorous thinking in that regard. Make an email list of exercise believers with special abilities for areas of need. Do you know within, say, 50 miles of your place or 100 miles of your place, do you know people that are really good at speaking to kids? Do you know people that are really good at speaking on a college campus? You know people who are really good at going down and speaking to the derelicts down by the train station? You know people who could come and train you, show you how to do things. But we should have that in our minds. We should know who the people are that can really come and do a good job and train us on the job to be effective in that sphere. Again, we just sort of have this very, vanilla view of things like, yeah, I think he does some gospel work. So what kind of gospel work? So what we're doing then is we're at least distinguishing gift, but we're not distinguishing ministry. So there are people who are very good speaking at a funeral. They wouldn't be the best people to preach in the open air. And likewise, the person in the open air probably isn't the guy you want haranguing everybody at the funeral. Now, they both may be evangelists, but they have very different ministries. So we need to start thinking that way and asking ourselves, do I know what's available in the area? Who would we ask to do this? If we were going to have a special event, who could we get to do that? Mobilizing prayer warriors, especially older saints who know how to pray. Very often old folks, they kind of feel like their days are over. They're not quite sure why they're still sticking around. We have an elderly lady, Pat Peebles, in our assembly, and she told me, after Good News on the Move got going, she said, Jay, these have been the three most exciting years of my life. I get on the bus in the morning with those boys, and I travel every day with them, and I pray for every detail, everything that I'm sent. I pray by names. In fact, she prays through that prayer list, I think, four times a day. It's just like I'm on the bus. So there are people like that, and these are tenacious people. You know, I was thinking of that. We were talking about parents not saved. You get some old people to pray for those parents. I've made comments about somebody that needs to be saved, and 5 years I come back, and the person comes up and says, so what happened to Joe Smith anyway? I say, who? You remember when you were here, you told he needed to get saved. I've been praying for him every day. Like, what happened? So if we're going to have some of these old-timers pray, we've got to make sure that we feed back the answers to the prayers too, right? And encourage them to realize that, yeah, God is working and God is answering their prayers. But we need that good connection there. And it would be good in a region to have somebody who is actively engaged in gathering this information, contacting assembly, any gospel efforts going on there lately, what's happening, any special needs in the Sunday school or camp work, or, you know, we're going to get this together, and if there's anybody in the area here who wants to pray, you know, evangelistically in the area, we're going to get this to them. And you get some local folks, older folks, and all of a sudden they feel like they're on the front line. They feel like this is key. This is strategic, right? So that's a good thing to do. Exploring ways to free up time and other stewardships for gospel work. You know, quite frankly, if you've got everything else but the time, nothing happens. Right? And that's where we have to start thinking creatively. I told you about the New York businessman that wrote a bestseller in the time it took him to ride up the elevator to his office every day. That's all the time he took. Got on the elevator. The numbers always go in the same order. You don't have to look at them. He'd have some little 3x5 cards in his pocket, pull out, and he'd write a few thoughts down, and when the elevator doors opened, he put it away, and he went to work. And that's all the time he took. And he wrote a bestseller in the time it took him to ride the elevator every day. So he was telling us something, wasn't he? There are all these little fag ends, these little butts of time. And we just think, well, I can't do anything with 3 minutes. Can't do anything with 5 minutes. But we can. We've got lots of those little bits and pieces through the day. And so to be able to utilize those bits of time and just pop in to see somebody, hey, I wanted to lead to this, I was thinking about you the other day, how are you doing? Like, you know, you show a little interest, express interest, or just pop in and say, hey, I don't suppose anybody stopped in to say, to remind you God loved you, right, today? Oh, well, good thing I stopped in, huh? Good. Well, you just remember that. You know how I know you loved it? For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. Whoever, that's you. Right? So, just a 2 minute, a 1 minute stop here and there. There's a lawyer in Timmins, Ontario. He could have any house. He's now a judge. He could afford any house in Timmins. He lives right downtown so that he walks to work every day. And he walks to work so he can talk to people all the way along the street. And when I go there, he'll say, what are you doing for lunch? And I think, oh, Ralph's taking me out for lunch. No, don't count on it. What are you doing for lunch? I said, oh, nothing. Here's $20. There's a little diner down there. The owner of that diner, he came out to our meeting a few times, but he's not saved. See if you can get a word with him. So he gives me my lunch money, and I go down there, and he's praying for me. And that's the idea. Look for an opportunity. Everybody has lunch somewhere. Well, wherever you go to have lunch, that's an opportunity, isn't it? So all of a sudden, throughout the day, the mailman comes to my house. Can I leave him a little something? Summer's coming on. You put a little thing in there and saying, you probably want to take your kids for an ice cream cone or something. Here's a little ice cream money, and here's a little story to read to your kids. I was driving around Augusta, Georgia one time with a dear brother, and he said, I got to get back to the house. He scooted back to the house. He went in. He always had a cooler sitting in his carport. And in it, there was always fresh lemonade and iced tea. And the garbage men all knew they could pull around there and there would be clean cups, iced tea and lemonade anytime they wanted a cold drink. And some little gospel tracts. And every day, he always had it out there. So, again, there are endless possibilities in our towns, right? And again, it's faithfulness, consistency, and waiting for the opportunity, looking for the channels of communication, waiting for the opportunity when the Lord opens the door and we step through it. Some ideas on this issue of time. We can find ways to multitask, right? That's one of the things we can do. The Lord Jesus was the ultimate multitasker. He's walking along the road, going from A to B. He's also training the disciples, laying the foundation for the church, doing the will of God, fulfilling the Old Testament scriptures, healing people, preaching the gospel of the kingdom. Right? all at once. So, my wife, she's a homemaker, so she makes some homemade cookies, and she teaches the girls how to make them. And she makes an extra batch, and they wrap them up, and they take them to some of the old folks and the shut-ins, the people at rest haven homes. And so she's economizing, and she's making the house a home, and she's teaching the girls how to be homemakers, and she's showing hospitality to the old folks, and teaching my daughters how to do that too, right? Mm-hmm. All at one time. So there are lots of ways, if we are open to the Lord doing that, like when you're packing a suitcase, if you're going away for a weekend, it looks full. If you're going away for 3 weeks, it is full. And you find ways to stick things in your shoes and wrap things around other things, and you maximize the use of the suitcase. And so the Lord says, you've got this time. There are ways to do more than one thing at a time, aren't there? So you're going somewhere, you're going to go and visit somebody, call up another young Christian and say, hey, I'd like you to come along. And you give them a taste of what it's like to go and visit in the hospital. You show them how to do it. Look, we're just going to take a couple of minutes here. Sick people don't like long visits. I'm just going to read a little scripture, and maybe you can pray. And here's a little something I found helpful, just to pray that the Lord will meet all their needs of spirit and soul and body. A little song, just a simple little prayer, right? And so we're cloning ourselves. We're replicating ourselves and showing other people how to do it while we're doing it ourselves. It's a good plan, isn't it? I'm sure there are lots of others, but as I'm saying, this whole generation of young people, well, time is the new wealth, right? We've got to find ways to economize on time. And some of it just means just turning off YouTube and Facebook and a lot of other things that just suck hours sometimes out of our week. So there are ways to say, well, maybe I can use YouTube and actually do some gospel work through it, or Facebook, encourage some of the young people to get out with the gospel. Or, you know, it's possible that it's not just turning it off. Sometimes it's turning it to something that's going to make it more useful for eternity. Okay, number four. Any comments about that? Maybe you've got some good ideas about how to save time. And
question.
Oh, yeah.
How can you end with the balance on this? When you say that getting people with gifts and abilities, perhaps you wouldn't want to have someone who's good at doing a funeral to do street work or something like that. Yet at the same time, the Lord's doing the work through us, and when we are weak, He is strong. And when I say, I just can't do that, then perhaps I'm just the person for it. You know what I mean? So, I mean, what's the balance? We want to get people with the gift for it, but it's the Lord doing the work. And so, I mean, do I do the things that I'm good at and that I'm gifted in? Do I reject doing things that I'm not good at or not gifted in? I mean, for example, someone asks me to do drama, which I've been asked to do before, I say, my first response is, I mean, I don't do that. I don't like to do drama. I'm not good at it. You don't want me to do drama. But, sometimes the response is, well, you know, you're the person for it because the Lord's going to do it through you. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, do we do those things, or do we do what we're good at and what we're gifted in, and then do we seek out people who are good and gifted in certain things, or do we say, well, you know what, we've got a couple people here who not so good at it, but, the Lord's going to do it through them.
Right. Yeah, taking that to its illogical conclusion, what we ought to do is find the most incompetent people to do everything. And that way God will be most glorified, because He has to overcome our stupidity. And, when we talk about weakness, we don't mean incompetence. Paul was not incompetent in what he did, was he? And here we come to an important distinction between what we might call incidental evangelism and intentional evangelism. The story is told about a man who was going to commit suicide in India, and as he's walking along, he sees a piece of paper blow out of a garbage dump. And he picks it up, and they're the most beautiful words he's ever read. And he shows it around to people, and eventually a nominal Christian says to him, that's out of the New Testament. Goes and finds the New Testament, reads it, and gets saved. Okay, so what do we draw from this? We should contact the Bible societies and tell them that what they need to do is tear all the pages out of the Bibles and throw them in the garbage. Because this is how God works. Okay. Now, we thank God for these incidental events where somebody who's thoroughly incompetent gets up and says all the wrong things, and somehow God blesses anyway, right? In fact, one of the most effective evangelists in Ireland in a past generation is a man named, Joe Stewart. Joe Stewart couldn't read or write. So he'd get up and he'd preach on things like this. The elephants shall melt with fervent heat. Imagine such a fire to burn up those big beasties. You know? He thought that's what it said. But you know, people still got saved. So again, what do we draw from that? I think we need to distinguish between weakness and incompetence. I remember a man getting up at the Toronto conference who was a children's worker. He was the best children's worker in Canada. And he got up and told us, I really shouldn't be here. And then went on to prove it. It wasn't his thing. So when we believe that we've been gifted and we've been given a ministry, we need to consider that and say, the reason the Lord gifted me and gave me a ministry was because he expects me to use the gift and to do the ministry. I think that's a fairly obvious conclusion. There are incidental situations where David Gooding ends up speaking to a children's Sunday school class. That's probably not, you know, and he probably pulled it off with aplomb. But that's probably not his, you know, his ministry. I think we would say we're weak. That's a good thing. But to feel that means we're incompetent. We were talking about this. How the heart by itself is very weak. You put a heart on the table there, and it's not going to last long. The heart needs the lungs. It needs the muscles. Needs the nerves. In other words, it needs support outside of itself to function properly. And we all, I think, recognize that very often God doesn't work to our strengths, what we think are our strengths. But the areas of our weakness, with his strength, are competent. Right? In other words, when the Lord comes on board and we begin to work, we're not incompetent. We are competent, but we realize it's the Lord who's made us that way. So we don't have natural tendencies. Now, let me use an illustration. A salesman probably won't become an evangelist. Because if he does, he'll tend to use his salesmanship tactics rather than depend on the Lord for evangelism. A guy joins the military and they say, what did you do in civilian life? I drove a truck. So we'll put him on a computer. Hey, I said I drove a truck. Yeah, we know. If we put you in motor pool, you'd think you know how to do it. We want you to teach the Army way. We want you to be dependent on us and learn the way we want to teach you. So I think when someone seeks to do something and we all have the sense that wasn't the right man for the job, it's not because they were weak and strengthened through Christ. It was because they were the wrong tool for the job. Now, you can take a socket wrench and use it as a hammer. It does really bad things to the nail, really bad things to the wall, really bad things to your knuckle. But you can eventually set that nail. I think there are a lot of people who are doing things who it does really bad things to them and really bad things to everybody else around them. We had a brother who he worked very well in the kids' Sunday school. They loved him down there. But he wanted the platform upstairs. And when he got on the platform, everybody was on eggshells the whole time he was up there. What is he going to say now? It was just a nervous wreck. So weakness is a good thing. Incompetence is not a good thing in the work of God. I think it's good to keep that clear. And again, there are incidental, there are situations where I'm the only one, I'm stuck, somebody's got to do something, and I do the best I can. But it's not always the best, is it? So occasionally the Lord will use me in a marvelous way where I least expect to be used. It's not, I'm way out of my depth, and the Lord uses me, and I just say, now just for example, I've ended up speaking at university campuses all across the world. I am not the guy for the job. Like, I'm not an egghead. I don't have a classical background. I don't have advanced degrees in philosophy or whatever. I'm not one of these, you know, Ravi Zacharias types. And yet somehow God uses me. Every time I say yes to one of those things, the minute I say yes, the concrete block starts to grow inside me. Until when the time actually comes for me to walk up and sit down there, I can hardly drag my legs over to sit there. And I keep thinking, why do I say yes? What's possessed me to say it? And yet somehow God blesses and uses it, you know? So I hope I'm not incompetent, but I'm extremely weak. I feel very weak, and it wouldn't be too hard for anybody to blow me out of the water. But I think the reason the Lord uses me is for that very reason, that I'm just totally cast on Him. Because I know there are lots of people who could start quoting, you know, some Middle Eastern archaeological discovery, and I have no idea what they're talking about. But anyway, the Lord just goes ahead and uses us anyway, right? And so I think we don't... Incompetence is something that describes the end product, the end result. Weakness is something that describes the precondition. So I go into it very weak. The Lord sustains me. He helps me. But the end result should be something in which people say, well, I didn't expect him to be able to pull that off. Obviously, God did that, and that's great. I mean, the Lord really used that in a wonderful way. Now, I don't think we should be too persnickety, too fussy when we first get started in the work of God. You know, like, I only speak to crowds of 1,200, sorry. I think we ought to be willing to do anything that can be a help to God's people. But as time goes by, again, we realize we have limited time. I mean, I've got, all things being equal, I may have another, you know, 10 or 12 summers left. What am I going to do with them? Because when you're young, you think you've got forever. You don't have forever. I remember the day I discovered, you know, I used to think, I'll give a whole year to study each book of the Bible. Well, 66 books, yeah, you ought to be able to do it, right? I mean, throw a few of the little ones together. And I remember the day I discovered, too late, can't do it now. So we realize we have limited time, and if we're going to serve God, we want to do the best we can do. We want to depend on Him, but we want to feel like we're the right tool for the job. We're in His hand. He's the one who provides. I mean, no screwdriver ever drove a screw. No hammer ever drove a nail. It's the mighty arm that wields it that actually does it. but there's a right tool, and the master picks it up and says, I want to use you for this. So if you're in a situation where people are telling you what to do, you want to be, you know, this is a careful distinction you have to make. The difference between being a servant of God and a servant to men. You are not a servant of men. In other words, God's the one who gives the directives. We're doing His work. We're not doing what people want. We're doing what the Lord wants. And so when the disciples came to the Lord and said, hurry, hurry, we got to get to Bethany right away, the Lord abode 2 days in the same place. I'm not running on your schedule, gentlemen. Several times He said this. Mine hour is not come. This isn't, you know, I'm not running on your schedule. And that was why, at the end of His ministry, 3.5 years, He could say, I finished the work. Because He said, I finished the work which Thou gavest me to do. Not what everybody else wanted me to do. But we'll never finish our project. We'll never finish the work that God gives us to do if we keep letting other people impose their will on us. We have to have a clear sense of what the Lord wants us to do and get about doing it. And so if somebody called me up and said, like for example, when I was a young guy, I was probably 25, I got a call one day, we'd like you to come and speak at our prophetic conference in Vancouver. This is a big deal, you know, 2,000 people at this prophetic conference. And I said, did you want to talk to my dad? No, we'd like you to come. So I said, well, you know, if I came, here's what my topic was. I'm not a prophetic scholar. So what I would do is I'd talk about the present implications of future events. How should we live now in the light of future events? I said, if you're not interested in that, tell me. They said, we're not interested in that. They just wanted some new twist on prophetic events, you see. I said, well, I'm not the man for the job. So I think there are times when somebody calls me up and says, Jay, would you come and do this? You know what a doctor does? If he has a patient, and the patient is in need of something that he doesn't feel he's capable of doing, he recommends a specialist. And I think there's a place for us to say that. When somebody comes and says, we'd like you to do this, I say, well, I appreciate the invitation, but you know, I really think this brother's a lot better at that than I am. I think he'd be the man for the job. In fact, I just did that with a conference where they were asking for a brother to come and speak about follow-up work and discipleship, and I said, I wish I knew what I was talking about in that department, but I'm the wrong guy for the job. Let me recommend this brother. He actually does that. So I think it's good for us to begin, because let's face it, in most assemblies, there's very little talk about distinguishing gift. Like if you were to sit down with the elders and say, okay, here's the list of all the people in your assembly. What gift do they have? What gift do they have? What about this person? What's their gift? It's not something we think about, right? So I think we have to start distinguishing that way. And say, you know, yeah, you can use the handle of a screwdriver to do a lot of things. But that's not really the purpose of the handle of a screwdriver. So I think we need to have that clear.